Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. Aaron joining us from the West Coast. I'm ensconced, not in velvet, but in the Baseball America podcast nook. So thanks for joining us, whether you download us at baseballamerica.com or on iTunes, or if you just follow the link on Twitter. Aaron, I hope you're if you listen to college baseball, I hope you're already following Aaron on Twitter. He's over 3,000 strong. Aaron, I got the 2,600, and then I went back down to 2,599. Some Klingon son of a gun dropped me.
Too many UNC basketball tweets, John. I think that's the answer.
I think that might be the answer. I'm up at 2,601 now, so I'm excited about being at 2,600. But you know, if you follow Aaron on Twitter, you're getting the best draft information out there, because to me, Aaron, when you're at a game, you just have such awesome info at the game, and you're so good at keeping track of pitchers or hitters and what those guys are doing. I enjoy following your tweets. That's the best thing for me about Twitter. I guess we only wish that we could have had the foresight to have sent you to Gainesville, to Baton Rouge this weekend for a little Florida LSU, but we'll start off on the podcast with talking about last weekend's two big series in the context of their conferences. And we had Florida at LSU and Virginia at home against Florida State from the ACC. Let's start off in the Southeastern Conference, Aaron. And LSU feeling very good about itself, as it should have, sweeping Florida State, Cal State Florida in the previous weekend. But then the Tigers get a little humbled this weekend as Florida comes in there. And we've talked a lot about the Gators already this year, but 18-2. Preseason number one, nary a stumble. And I think, Aaron, the biggest story this so far is just how good Florida's pitching has been. And they go in there and really shut down a high-powered LSU offense, 7 runs in 3 games. How good is Florida's pitching? Is this the best pitching staff in the country?
I think it's the deepest pitching staff in the country. And you know, whether it's the best or not, you can certainly make that case. I mean, I don't know that their frontline guys are better than Gerrit Cole and Trevor Bauer, for instance, but they're pretty darn good. You know, I mean, Brian Johnson, Hudson, and Carson Whitson have been just terrific all season long. Their bullpen is just such a separator, though. I mean, it's like you get Carson Whitson out of the game fairly early on Sunday. Congratulations. What do you win? I mean, you get to face the bullpen. It's not a reward. There's no reward for getting to the starters, because the bullpen guys are just as good, with Nick Mirande and Greg Larson and Anthony DeSclafani and now Austin Maddox and on and on and on, Paco Rodriguez. I mean, there's just no let up there. It's such a huge advantage. I mean, you know, I think we've talked before about how pivotal South Carolina's bullpen was in that national title run last year. I think that's the single biggest reason South Carolina was so good, and that they won the title, is because their bullpen was just rock solid. I think that showed up this weekend. And certainly they got good starting pitching, but they also got very good bullpen work. And, you know, their offense did enough. And you know, let's give LSU's pitching staff some credit. I think it's a much better staff than we weren't sure that it was going to be a good staff. We didn't think it was going to be a bad staff necessarily, but we just didn't know what to expect from LSU staff. And I think it is a good staff, you know, so give Florida some credit for scoring some runs off those guys.
Yeah, I think it's pretty impressive that I just think it's impressive that the Gators, and I think they got LSU's best shot. They got, you know, LSU, we talked about it last week, how much better LSU's starting pitching has been this year, maybe than people expected it to be. Obviously, we had pretty high expectations for Kevin Gausman. But, I mean, we talked about it last week. I mean, Kurt McCune has kind of come out of nowhere and been a Friday guy. And he went toe-to-toe with the number one team in the country and held his own. I just think it's so impressive that Florida was able to go in there with big crowds, crowds that had energy, crowds that gave LSU energy, and able to sweep the series. What do we learn about LSU maybe out of this series, Aaron? I mean, they've had kind of not a soft, I should say cream puff, but it hadn't played really a big-time ranked team. I hadn't played a ranked team until last weekend. They play Fullerton and sweep Fullerton, and they play Florida and get swept. I mean, what's your take on – kind of what's your Tigers' takeaway after these two weekends at the extremes?
Well, you know, I mean, I still think that they're probably the class of the SEC West. You know, I think that opinion was kind of reinforced last weekend. And you know, they played well this weekend. It was games, the first two in particular against Florida, were very close and competitive games. You know, both one-run affairs they could have won. You know, they thought they had tied up that game Friday on the Ty Ross double some thought was a home run, I guess. You know, so they were right in that game, and you know, it was a 1-0 game on Saturday. You know, Kevin Gausman can't pitch a whole lot better than that for 8 innings. LSU showed that they're not far behind Florida. You know, they are at home. You'd like to see them win one of those games at home, but it's a good club, and I think they're going to be a major factor here in the SEC.
Do we have any more concern as we did kind of started to have last year? You know, Matty Ott had a pretty disastrous sophomore season. You know, he blew the lead on Friday. It's not like he got destroyed or anything like that. But any concern for you about Matty Ott and that closer role? And does LSU have an alternative if Matty Ott struggles in SEC play as he did last year?
I think the alternative is probably Ryan Eads. You know, who's still just a freshman and still just learning. He's not a finished product, but he's got a great arm, you know, and he's healthy now. That was the kind of the question mark about him coming in, was how healthy was he going to be as a freshman. But he's throwing the ball very well, and he's just refining a few things. So I think he's kind of a little security blanket maybe down the road. But for now, certainly, you know, Ott's still the guy. You know, I think that the Tigers are pleased with the turnaround that Matty has made since last year, and I think Friday was kind of a hiccup. I think in general he's pitched well this year, and they've seen progress from him. So I don't think they're too worried about Matty yet.
Well, we mentioned that, you know, we still think LSU is the class of the SEC West. SEC conference play started this weekend, and LSU obviously you get swept. You're at the bottom of those rankings, you're at the bottom of those standings when you go 0-3. Let's talk about the rest of the SEC West here for a minute, Aaron, because you know, we did not have and we haven't had any other SEC West teams ranked. I don't believe – did we rank Ole Miss this year or no?
No, we did not. We talked about them, I think, last week or at some point we talked about them. But, no, they have not been ranked. I thought probably that they were better than Alabama, for instance, coming into this weekend, and they proceeded to lose a series to Alabama. So Ole Miss clearly still has some work to do. Alabama's played fairly well, not great over the course of the season, but, you know, I mean, I think clearly those two teams are, to me, right next to each other. And, it's very interesting, that division, because, you know, I think Auburn and Arkansas are kind of neck and neck also. They played a pretty good series this weekend. Auburn won that series at home, but, you know, they were at home. I mean, how much can we draw from that? I don't know. It's a good question. So, I mean, I think right now Auburn is the number two team. We moved them into the rankings at number 22. Arkansas not too far behind.
Yeah, I think Auburn's interesting, Aaron, because last year they were a very power-centric team. I believe they led the nation in home runs, more than 100 home runs last year. Lost a lot of those guys at the draft and really struggled on the mound to really just find a shutdown number one pitcher. They really never kind of had one. They had a couple guys go through that role. And now you have the veteran Corey Luckey who's back. But then they're really thriving this weekend with a couple of JUCO transfers, Will Irvin and Derek Vernador, going into the weekend rotation. They're combined 6-0, those two guys. Vernador's a guy who I know quite a bit about. He came into last year with a decent, really nice reputation and wasn't thought of as more of a pro guy, but he's got a little bit of a distinctive delivery. And, I know the scouts I talked to really thought he'd be a good college pitcher, and he's off to a great start there for the Tigers. What's been the key in your mind for them? It seems like they've found some of these new pitchers, both in the rotation and in the bullpen, and they're finding new ways to score without having to rely too hard on the home run.
Yeah, and they've still gotten the occasional home run. I think Kevin Patterson had a big one this weekend for them, and he's kind of their big power anchor in the middle of that lineup. He had a lot of home runs last year and only limited playing time. But, for me, the thing about this Auburn team is even though they lost a bunch of key veteran guys last year, they've got a bunch of veteran players back. They're just, you know, players that were kind of waiting in the wings. They're a little bit like Virginia in that way. You know, Virginia's got these seniors like Kenny Swab and David Coleman and, you know, these guys that have stepped forward from part-time roles into everyday roles. And Auburn is similar to that. You know, they've got the Wes Gilmers and the Dan Gamaches and the,
right.
Those guys, Justin Hargis, all these guys, Creed Simpson, they've all been there. They've all been winning players, and they're just taking on more of a role now. And I think it's nice to have older players in your program carrying the load. I mean, this really is a veteran team still.
Yeah, and I think it has to be underscored. The track record of John Pawlowski teams, even though he was a big league pitcher, I always think this is kind of funny. His team score runs. You know, you can put him on a lot of different coaches' coaching trees, like, you know, Jack Leggett, he coached with him, and Pat Murphy. He's like he has a little bit more of Murph in him than he has of Jack Leggett, because his teams figure out ways to score runs, just like Arizona State's teams always did. And, you know, it's impressive, even with the you know, even with all those guys that they lost, they're still pretty loud offensively. Meanwhile, Arkansas, you know, usually we don't talk about other rankings, Aaron, but Arkansas, I think we kind of have to. They were in everybody else's rankings, even in the top 10 in one ranking. Might have been the coaches' poll where they're in the top 10. We had not ranked the Razorbacks as of yet, and they'd really played a pretty light schedule, and they're a team like Auburn that lost an awful lot from last year's team. And you talked to Dave Van Horn last week when they were out on the West Coast. You went to go see him play. You talked to him. You wrote about him, I believe, in Three Strikes, where he was talking about, you know, establishing a new identity for their team and new guys, you know, being the leaders. You know, what's your takeaway from them this weekend, losing that series at Auburn, and kind of, you know, do they have a chance? It seems like they have a shot to be that number two team in the SEC West after LSU.
I think they do. But, you know, one thing that I think is a major concern is this weekend, this past week, I should say, they lost Jeffrey Davenport to Tommy John surgery, and he was really a key guy. You know, he was their veteran, kind of long relief stopper kind of guy. You know, sort of like, go back to another Virginia comparison here, kind of like what Tyler Wilson was for Virginia last year. You know, I saw Davenport out in the West Coast, and, you know, it's a really good breaking ball. I mean, he was a key piece for them. You know, so I think that's a big loss. They do still have pieces in the bullpen. I mean, Owen Sanborn, the freshman, I really like at the back. We've talked about him before. But, you know, this week, again, their starters didn't really go deep, and that's a concern. You know, they need more from their starting pitchers, especially now without Davenport, who is kind of that security blanket. None of their starters went five innings this weekend. I think two of them went less than four innings. That's not going to cut it in the SEC, you know, and they need Cade Lynch to step forward. You know, and they need Brandon Moore to step forward. I mean, those two guys, if they're going to be the starters, they just have to pitch better. So right now, to me, that's still a major question for Arkansas. As much as I like their lineup, their young talent, I mean, I think they're going to hit. I think they're going to score a lot of runs. I think they're very athletic. They're probably going to be good defensively. How good are they going to be in the mound? I think that part is still in question.
I think that's all how I think about Arkansas. You know, Ryan Stanek, a guy we love from a pro standpoint, from a draft standpoint. You know, pitch a middle relief and not throwing strikes. When you go into SEC play and you walk guys, your coach is not going to put you back out there until you throw strikes. It's just the way it goes. Meanwhile, the East, I think we both agree, not only is it really good at the top, obviously three of the top four teams in our rankings are still SEC East teams. Aaron, does Georgia, Kentucky, or Tennessee have a shot at a regional bid? Tennessee obviously got off to a great start, but then lost the weekend series to at Kentucky this weekend. Any of those teams got a shot at a regional bid in your mind? All three teams have a shot at a regional bid. Who do you like best out of those other three teams?
Yeah, I could see any of the three making a run. Certainly not all three, but I think any of the three is capable of making a run. You know, I mean, and take your pick. I mean, coming into the year, I thought those teams were all fairly close together. We had Georgia as the top of those three teams coming in, based on talent and, you know, just thinking that maybe this is the year some of those guys put it together. And Georgia has played the toughest schedule of that group, you know, but they haven't quite been consistent. I mean, that's for sure. You thought they had pulled out of it, and then, you know, the schedule was hard. They went to South Carolina. They played South Carolina well. They won the first game. They probably should have won the second game. They blew a late lead.
Right.
But, you know, I still feel like Georgia, that might be the team. I mean, that might be the one out of that group that that I could see making a run later in the year. We'll see how they handle SEC play. But, you know, Kentucky, I think, is good on the mound. I mean, they're a factor, certainly. Tennessee, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to make of Tennessee yet. They really haven't played anybody in the pre-conference at all. You know, they didn't play great this weekend. Again, how's their pitching going to hold up? And I like Steven Groover as their Friday guy. He's a good competitive college guy, throws strikes, good breaking ball. You know, Drew Steckenrider, they threw Saturday. He's got a great arm, but he's really not proven as an SEC starter. So there's some questions for Tennessee to answer.
Steckenrider, one of my all-time favorite names. They do have one of the guys is probably putting up you take a little bit of the sting out of the bats and you make it more of a speed contact game. And Kyan Norfolk, their second baseman, just having an insane season. I mean, again, you have to wonder about caliber of play, but Kyan Norfolk's hitting 500 after, 20 games, and he's got a 615 on base, and he's stealing a ton of bases. I got an email about him last night and was looking him back up again, and I've had a couple emails about him, but that guy's having just a dynamic year, 5'10", second baseman. Those guys, he's a senior. He's having a great senior season. It would be, it would be important to Tennessee with what has gone on in their football program the last couple of years, with what's going on in their basketball program now. It would be important, I think, for Tennessee fans to have a team to rally around. And I think if Tennessee's baseball team got going, Todd Raleigh's been there for, I think it's his fourth year now, Aaron, and I don't think they've gone to regionals yet. It would be good for Todd Raleigh for them to get going. So that to me, it might be the most interesting of those other three clubs just to watch, because they do have some young talent. But wow, they really are. they're interesting, but like you said, they had not played really anybody in terms of caliber play. Now, caliber play, you want someone who has played somebody? Well, let's take Florida State. Let's talk about the Seminoles. And Aaron, I don't think I can remember a better 1-3 week. You don't want to go 1-3, but the Seminoles on the road at Florida lost in 10 innings. They played four games against top 10 teams at Florida and at Virginia, all on the road, obviously. Lose three of them. And, all four games decided by one run. The Seminoles, that's just a pretty impressive series. We've already talked about Virginia a little bit, so let's talk about them again. You keep bringing them up, but with reason. 19-2, outside of Florida and Vanderbilt, I think Virginia's had the most impressive season and most impressive maybe resume of any team this year.
Yeah, you're right. To go on the road and sweep Clemson last weekend and then follow it up with a great series win against Florida State, and what an intense series it looked like that was. Those two teams just went back and forth, trading blows, and three straight extra inning games. I think those teams are very evenly matched, and you play that series in Tallahassee, maybe you've got three straight extra inning games with Florida State winning two of them. I think those are the two best teams in the ACC, and it's hard to tell really who's better. I guess you say Virginia's a little bit better. They did win the series, but boy, it's close, and I think Virginia's pitching, the frontline pitching, I think we both agree we like better.
Right.
And Virginia, Stephen Procia and John Hicks in the middle of the lineup.
The Aaron Fitt bat phone is ringing.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay. I think people understand that you work and you do a lot. You're working at home and coaches are calling you. But, Virginia, the other thing I guess about this, Aaron, is that Virginia, and Florida State, both have gotten their Friday guys. Sean Gilmartin has been good. He was great as a freshman. He was okay as a sophomore. But it sounds like the Gilmartin-Holton matchup was everything we expected it to be. We actually have a question on Twitter from PSL to Flushing, who's a big draft fan. Is Danny Holton propelling himself into top 10 status? I think we talked about this a little bit last week. Yes, isn't he? Danny Holton, he's the best left-hander in the draft for me after Matt Perk. And if you wanted to say you take Danny Holton over Matt Perk, I would listen. Would you listen, Aaron? Would you listen to that argument? Or could you make that argument?
Absolutely. And I think there's some clubs out there that probably do like him over Matt Perk because he's just such a safe bet and there's more risk with Perk. Holton's a big leaguer. I think I might have said last week, I think he's Mike Minor. That's the kind of guy I think he is. And boy, he's been dominant too. He's really made a jump. And if you look back at Friday's weekend preview, I had some quotes from Brian O'Connor about Holston and what's been different about him this year. And as good as he's been the first two seasons at Virginia, he's better this year. It's amazing.
Yeah, he's basically become a better version of Sean Doolittle. He doesn't have doesn't quite deliver the offense that Doolittle did in college. But again, we're talking about two-way players at Virginia who are both left-handers who also hit. Doolittle made more of a he made a lot more of a impact with the bat over the
at least
course
early
of his,
in his
over
career.
The, I was gonna say, over the course of his career, cumulatively, I would say, than Holton, he hit for more power, at least a little bit more power, because Holton doesn't hit home runs. But Danny Holton, he's doing it offensively this year too. I know he didn't have a great weekend this weekend, but he's been an offensive player as well. And then, you know, like you said, like we talked about last week, or I guess it was last Sunday, where they hit their first home run, they got, you know, a little bit of a power surge this week. It doesn't seem like there's a big weakness with the Cavaliers.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, I think that I think they're you know, they've proven that they're one of the best teams in the country once again. I think it's very impressive the way they've been able to reload. And you know, like we said, slide pieces into place, and they still haven't really had Steven Bruno, their projected starting shortstop, healthy. He's been sidelined with that hamstring injury, and when he gets back, I think they could be even better because Brian O'Connor really likes Steven Bruno.
Well, once again, the ACC's got a little bit of an imbalance. Not, you know, I don't think it's as top-heavy in one conference as the SEC is. The Coastal Division is good, but I don't think Georgia Tech, Virginia, and whoever you want to say the third team is right now. Miami's 6-0 in the conference, and North Carolina's 4-2. And North Carolina's ranked. Obviously, the Coastal's not as good as the SEC East, but the Atlantic Division, Aaron, and the ACC. I'm kind of scratching my head about this. The Atlantic Division. You have Florida State, which I think is having a great year. You know, tough series loss. Obviously, a tough week this week with those 3-1-1 losses. But Clemson 3-3, you know, lost this week to Presbyterian. We dropped them in the rankings, basically for that loss. They did sweep Duke this weekend, and Duke is scrappy, so that's a good series. You know, Clemson held serve, but BC Wake Forest, which won a series against North Carolina, but is not. I don't think we think is a very good team. Maryland, and then probably the biggest disappointment in the ACC, NC State, the team I really thought. I was higher on NC State than you were, I think, going into the season. But I really thought the Wolfpack were going to be a regional team for sure this year. And they have one winning weekend all year. And this weekend, they just got dominated by Georgia Tech. You want to start off talking about the Yellow Jackets or the Wolfpack first?
Well, we're talking about the Wolfpack, so let's talk about the Wolfpack. I mean, they, you know, they've been a huge disappointment. You're absolutely right. I mean, I thought that, first of all, that they would hit, even with the new bats, maybe not for as much power as they have hit for, but it seems like they're struggling to adapt. You know, they were a team that was kind of dependent on the long ball, and they haven't been able to remake their identity. It's very concerning. You know, they just they don't have other dimensions, and on the mound, I mean, they're just plain not good enough. You know, they've got Corey Mazzoni; he's pitched well. The rest of the staff just hasn't gotten it done. So yeah, this is not a regionals team. I mean, right now they need to really get hot and probably will need to make some noise in the ACC tournament. I mean, it's so early to talk about that, but
right.
I mean, they lost three straight series. They lost a series to Penn State, which, you know, kudos to Penn State. I guess they had a good weekend this weekend too. But that's a series NC State needs to win.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that NC State, you know, they've got a Friday guy in Mazzoni. They have a legit Friday guy who can go toe to toe with most, you know, really good Friday pitchers. But their other next two pitchers are these guys who don't have good arms, who they don't even really like. Grant Sasser and Rob Chamra are not Tom Holliday's favorite pitchers. Tom wants power arms. Those guys are not power arms. Those are their next two best pitchers. And Sasser, you know, that was their problem last year, was their bullpen was one of their problems. And Sasser was clearly their go-to guy last year, and he was the last guy they tried. And to their credit, they're giving him more opportunities this year, but you got to score to get ahead to bring him in. And right now they're just not scoring enough offensively. And I think, you know, I thought and you thought, like you said, that there'd be a little bit more offense there. I agree with you. They're a little bit one-dimensional. They don't run. You know, they don't move runners consistently. And they just got annihilated this weekend by Georgia Tech. Meanwhile, the Yellow Jackets, I think there's some caveats that we have to put in with the Yellow Jackets because of how young they are, but also because they played two road games all year and they were at Georgia Southern. Which they split those games. They have not left the state of Georgia, and their first two series were at home in the league against Maryland and NC State, two teams that are struggling. Maryland struggling from a talent level perspective, and NC State, as we just detailed, struggling in many ways. But now they go on the road, and it's at Miami, which is, you know, always difficult to go play the Hurricanes on the road, but Miami's 12-8. You know, that's a winnable series. Then they're at Duke. And then while they play Virginia after that, then it's at Wake Forest. It's a really backloaded schedule for Georgia Tech. They don't play Florida State in the ACC this year. That's who they miss. It really looks like Georgia Tech has a chance to really put up a pretty gaudy record here. And this is the kind of team that, frankly, is setting up to have like a top eight national seed if they keep playing this well, because they're going to win and the schedule sets up pretty well for them.
You're right. And the ACC, I down this year. You know, it's I like Virginia and Florida State at the top. Clemson's got some serious question marks, you know, on the mound right now especially. I mean, they finally got a quality start from Scott Firth on Sunday, but without Kevin Brady, who's going to be out a little bit longer than they originally thought, you know, Clemson is I think has got some real concerns when it comes to pitching. So, you know, after that, I mean, I think clearly Miami is, they've rebounded nicely, but Miami's not an elite team. You know, and I think the teams at the back are down a little bit. Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, Boston College. I mean, none of those teams, you know, even Duke is scrappy, but not a regional caliber team. So, yeah, I think Georgia Tech should be able to, I mean, they're a lot better than most of the teams that are remaining on their schedule. You know, they're mostly just because of the pitching. You know, I mean, their pitching staff has been really, really, really good. And we thought that would be the strength of this team. But Mark Pope has been even better than you could possibly expect with his scoreless streak he's got going right now. Jed Bradley, you know, it's funny looking around the country how many good Saturday starters there are right now with Bradley and Trevor Bauer and Matt Barnes. I mean, all these All-American guys happen to be pitching on Saturdays. But
I don't see how that Matt Barnes Saturday thing can how can that persist? I know we're getting off track here a little bit, but Elliot Glenn, 0-4, yeah. Getting hit. I mean, that, you know, doesn't UConn have to say, hey, Elliot, let's move you to Sundays and see what happens and try to figure something out? I mean, I don't know. Jim Pender knows this team better than I do, obviously. But, I mean, I'd be a little concerned if I were a UConn fan if they kept on starting Elliot Glenn on Friday. You can't, if you keep on doing the same thing and expecting different results, I don't think that's a good strategy.
But at the same time, you know, now that Barnes is in a groove on Saturdays, I mean, some guys I mean, do you not want to mess with Barnes? I mean, I don't know. Maybe you're right. It's a tough one. I probably would move him to Fridays. I think you want to start the weekend on your best foot. But UConn's another story. I mean, they obviously dropped out of our rankings this week, and they, you know, at this point they've dug themselves into enough of a hole that they probably need to get the automatic bid if they're going to think about regionals, because I don't think they've got enough. You know, I don't think they'll be able to recover from an RPI standpoint from this rough start. They're below 500 right now.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. One thing I want to touch on with Georgia Tech, who was our number one ranked freshman class this year? I forget. Was Stanford? No.
It was Stanford.
And, you know, Stanford, that's a whole other story. They haven't played for 2 weeks. I mean, the weather obviously impacting them, but their exam schedule and then the weather, losing their series against Michigan this weekend, and to the weather, not losing the series, but pretty tough to have a team that's 6-5 in our rankings. It feels like it's before the it feels like they're Wichita State and they didn't start the season until March like things used to happen. You know, it's crazy. But Georgia Tech, I think we knew they had a great freshman class. We knew they were going to rely a lot on freshmen. But three freshmen really stand out for me with them. Daniel Palka, who I think you had a great comp on him last week. I think it was in weekend preview. He's like Tony Plagman part two. You know, he's just another left-handed power bat, a thumper in the middle of their lineup. Like Tony Plagg, but he's going to strike out a lot. He's aggressive. He doesn't walk a lot, but he's got power. Kyle Wren, one of the two twin sons of Frank Wren, the Braves general manager, just having an unbelievable year. He might be one of the fastest players in college baseball. He might be one of the fastest players in college basketball if he played college basketball. But the third guy that really jumps out to me is Dusty Isaacs, the kid out of Ohio. I believe it was a 20th round pick of the Pirates. I know Jim Callis wrote him up in Ohio, just a 6-foot righty, but he has been money out of their bullpen, and their bullpen seems like it's just so deep, Aaron. They just have so many options. They like Luke Barr. They obviously like, when he's healthy, they like Kevin Jacob, you know, working him back into shape. And, you know, they love the arm of DeAndre Smelter. They have so many options back there. Their pitching, like you said, we thought their pitching would be a strength, and so far it has been. It's the Baseball America podcast with John Manuel and Aaron Fitt. And we have another Twitter question, but it was about Mark Pope. We just were talking about Georgia Tech. What kind of draft prospect is Mark Pope? And in your take, I mean, I know he was touch of 96 out of high school. What do you hear about Pope, just as far as his stuff has been this year, and what's been the key to his success?
Well, you know, the guy, first of all, I think he's made big strides with his pitchability. You know, it's he throws a lot of strikes. He throws four pitches for strikes, and he throws them in any count. You know, he's not just a velocity guy, and he does have good velocity. He'll run it up there to, you know, I mean, he kind of sits 88, 92 range. That's kind of his comfort range right now. And I think he's, he's able to get outs that way and not try to overthrow. He does have a little two seam run in there, but it's a good change up. It's made progress with that pitch. He's got a slider and a curveball. I mean, he's a four pitch guy and he's really working the zone and commanding everything well. It's impressive.
It is impressive. I mean, just that level of consistency is pretty mind boggling. Aaron, talking about, I guess if you're looking for anybody who's had a better season than Pope, you have to go out west. It sounds like to one of the new teams in our rankings this week. Meet the new teams, kind of, you know, not so much unfamiliar names though. The O-State Ballers, Oregon State, coming back into our rankings. They're at 23. We mentioned Auburn earlier. The Tigers jumped into our rankings at 22. UConn was one of the teams that dropped out. We talked about them. College of Charleston, 15-6 overall, but a 1-3 week in their own home tournament this week. See you later. Let's talk about Oregon State, though, because it sounds like they have the only pitcher in the country with better numbers than Mark Pope, and that's Sam Gaviglio. I think he's been a favorite of ours for a couple years, Aaron, because this is a guy who came in and instantly bolted to the front of their rotation despite the presence of guys when he was healthy then. Josh Osich, who's back now. Greg Peavy, Kevin Roderick in their bullpen.
Tanner Robles.
I knew there was a third tenor out there. But here's the Oregon State just losing a lot of talent and a lot of ballyhooed players. But you got a chance to see the Beavers this weekend at Long Beach State. And I don't know if you saw Gaviglio, but what's Oregon State doing to get back into our rankings?
Well, I think they're really talented. You know, first of all, very good on the mound. I mean, Gaviglio's been outstanding. You know, I mean, he's we'll have more on him in Golden Spike Spotlight, but the guy can just really pitch. He's a dogged competitor with great command, and it's not overpowering stuff. It's, you know, kind of a fringe average fastball on the pro scale, but he puts it where he wants to. And you know, he's got a good slider and a good changeup and boy he's just a great competitor, you know. And I saw Josh Osich on Saturday, part of their doubleheader there, and he's a special arm, you know. He's getting it back. He's sitting 93-95. He got up to 96-97. His changeup, he's throwing effectively. He's still not really throwing breaking balls, but he's going to get stronger and stronger, and that's kind of a scary thought. They also, you know, they've got some thump in the middle of their lineup. I mean, Andrew Susak is having a great year, living up to his All-America billing. And he hit a ball on Friday against Drew Gagneau that might still be going. You know, he crushed it, and this was at Blair Field very often. And Danny Hayes hit one right after that, and boy, Danny Hayes can hit. You know, that's a guy that they brought in and expected a lot from. He's a NorCal guy that had a reputation as being just a, you know, natural born hitter kind of a guy, and now he's doing that. He's giving Susak some protection in the middle of the lineup. I think Oregon State is athletic. You know, I like Jake Rodriguez. It's another guy that's kind of a newcomer that can hit a lot. Garrett Nash, they're trying at the top of the lineup, and he brings some real athleticism. And Brian Stamps also right with him. Brian Stamps can really fly. I mean, that guy can run. They compare him to athletically to a Jacoby Ellsbury type. He's not the kind of hitter that Ellsbury is, but he's that kind of defender, and he's got that kind of speed. So they've got a lot of different dimensions. I think they're talented. They had a nice winning streak going until losing the finale there against Long Beach, but they haven't played the greatest competition, but they did beat Oregon. They did beat UConn, and winning a series at Long Beach is solid, and they're talented. So that's why they're in the rankings.
Yeah, it really seems like, again, they have a lot of depth. I mean, they got a nice senior in James Nygren. Am I pronouncing his name right?
Yeah.
Nygren. He seems like he's a nice fallback guy. I mean, he's not a guy they're necessarily counting on in the weekend rotation. I know he has started some games. But they just seem like they have a lot of options, again. And, I mean, like, that just seems – to me, that's always a key if you're going to have a long winning streak, because you just can't rely on just your cluster of stars. You've got to have some depth, and Oregon State seems like they have some depth. But let's wrap up maybe a little bit of the podcast, Aaron, talking a little bit about the Pac-10 since we're talking about Oregon State. We did not have you have Stanford and UCLA that were both off this weekend, but Cal with a big series with a series victory. I guess the other one is Arizona State is the team that we haven't talked maybe as much about this year, and yet the Sun Devils again they go and beat Oklahoma twice this week in midweek. They're up to what, number 6 or 7 in our rankings?
Six.
up to number six in our rankings. And they haven't been as dominant as they were last year when they were just a machine and just steamrolled teams. But I know coming into the year we thought Arizona State was one of the best lineups, if not the best lineup in the country. They threw two of their best arms against Oklahoma in Barrett, who had a career high 11 strikeouts, and then Brady Rogers coming back off of an injury to win that midweek series. Now they're going to be tested again midweek with Fullerton. I think you can expect them to have Rogers and Barrett on the mound again, and then they play Arizona and Oregon to start Pac-10 play. Is Arizona State the favorite in the Pac-10 for you? A favorite? Who's the favorite in the Pac-10 at this juncture for you? I think coming into the year we thought it was UCLA. Who would you say it is now?
Boy, it sure seems like Arizona State is almost favored by default in that league. They've just, every year they're just a machine. They just win. And they get into conference play and they get in these grooves, and it doesn't matter who else is good. Last year UCLA was really good, and they got swept, I'm pretty sure, by Arizona State, and that was in LA. I think Arizona State is the favorite right now. They've got these guys that step forward for them on the mound, these kind of unheralded guys. Like this week it was Kramer Champlin with a complete game on Friday, and then Kyle Audison again coming, giving them six strong innings. The left-hander, a couple of junior college transfers. They need Brady Rogers to return to form. I mean, he did pitch again on Sunday and didn't pitch so well. I don't know that he's close to 100% yet, but we'll find out soon. But I really love their lineup. I think they're so athletic. I did think they were the best lineup in the country coming into the year. Maybe not the most powerful, but
right.
But they don't. There's no let up in that lineup at all. There is some power in the middle, but there's a lot of doubles and triples guys. They're so patient, and they really can grind out at bats like they always do, and they're explosive. They can score runs in bunches, although they haven't. That hasn't really been the identity of this team this year. I think they're not blowing people out, which is interesting, but they are winning. That's for sure. I think they made a statement by sweeping Oklahoma midweek, and I look forward to seeing them this week at Cal State Fullerton.
Yeah, I know that it's kind of my shtick on the show. You're the analyst, you're the expert. My shtick is I'm good at looking crap up, and quoting some stats. But to me, Arizona State's statistics really jump out to me, Aaron, because last year Zach McPhee was captain extra base hit. This year he has three. They are not a home run power team. I never think of them as a team that slugs a ton of home runs, even with their ballpark. They do have nine home runs this year. That's pretty good. In this era, that's pretty good. They have 41 steals, Aaron, and their opponents have two.
Yeah.
Two steals. And the thing is, to me, like you've written about a lot this year, speed translates on defense more than anything else in college baseball. Their speed's translating both offensively and defensively, and speed does not slump. If you're fast, you're always fast. The only way speed slumps is if you get hurt. But Arizona State, to me, has all the makings of a consistent team, and they still, to me, haven't gotten hot yet. They have not gotten really going with the bats. I mean, I think that McPhee and Zach Wilson especially are two guys that I expect to make a little bit more of an impact with the bat than they have. And that team also, I think you look out for – one of the things you look at, to me, when you're looking at stats, is strikeout-to-walk ratio for teams. Their strikeout-to-walk ratio is excellent on the mound, where they've almost got a strikeout an inning, and it's excellent at the plate. You put in the hit-by-pitches. They've actually reached more – have more hit-by-pitches and walk than they have strikeouts in offense. So they're still an offensive team. But like you said, they haven't exploded yet. They really haven't scored in big bunches yet. I think they're a dangerous team. I think they are the favorite in the Pac-10. And it's going to be fascinating to watch that conference as those teams start getting going because, can UCLA kind of get its act back together and start scoring? And we still don't know, I don't think, what kind of team Stanford has. They played three really tough weekends in a row, and now they haven't played for 2 weeks, and they're the hardest team to evaluate in the country. Anybody also, you do Under the Radar every week, Aaron, and I loved last week's Under the Radar with Seattle. It's always a part of weekend preview. Anybody out of the top 25? I don't know if you want to talk anything about the Troys or Southern Misses or the Stetsons or East Carolina, some of those teams that were on the worksheet and haven't quite gotten on. I've had a chance to see ECU a little bit this year. it's just startling to see an East Carolina team where their identity is pitching and defense. That's not what I expect to see when I see the Pirates. Any of those off-the-radar teams or off-the-top 25 teams, or is there an under-the-radar team maybe you wanted to bring up on the podcast?
Well, you know, Texas State is the other team. If you're talking about teams that were in the top 25 discussion, didn't quite crack it. You know, I like that team a lot. They're the favorite right now in the Southland Conference. They've swept two straight series against, you know, I think pretty good teams in Texas A&M Corpus Christi, who, you know, that's one of those teams we wrote about in Under the Radar a few weeks ago. That's a team that it's an older team that thinks it's dangerous, thinks it can make it's poised to make a run this year. And they got swept by Texas State. And then Sam Houston State this week, it's another team that had played pretty well this year. Texas State has played some good midweek games. They do have a win against Baylor, a couple of losses in there against Rice and Texas. But, you know, you've got a great ace in Carson Smith. You've got a great table setter in Tyler Sibley. He's really, really taken a major step forward. He was already a good player, but he's just dynamic atop the lineup. You know, they like Kyle Kubica, Austin's brother, another guy who's gotten better this year. I think Texas State's a team that could sneak its way into the top 25 here before long.
You know, you were talking about Texas. Maybe remember that before we sign off on the podcast, we probably should talk about the one team that jumped up 13 spots in our rankings, Aaron.
Yeah, let's do that.
Texas A&M. I don't know. That's how good I am at running this show. But Texas A&M, 21st in the rankings coming in. Had played well, only one weekend series where they had not won the weekend. That was when you saw them in person, but down in the Houston College Classic. But a solid series win against Florida International, series win against Gonzaga, sweep of Lemoyne. And when they, you know, when you play Lemoyne early, you better dominate them, and they did. But probably no team had as good of a week as Texas A&M, beating Fullerton in midweek, then winning a series at Oklahoma, which was our number three team. The Sooners with a reeling week, going 1-4, losing those two midweek to Arizona State. But let's talk about the Aggies. We knew, and you saw it in person, how good they would pitch. But they got enough offense this weekend. Let's focus on their pitching, though. What makes the Aggies so good on the mound, and what made us jump them 13 spots?
Well, you know, they jumped 13 spots, I think, like you said, because they had a great week and, you know, better than any team out there except Florida. You know, you beat Fullerton midweek, shut them out, and then you go on the road and beat Oklahoma 2 out of 3. I mean, you know, that's a statement weekend. And this team's identity is pitching. It's really good. We all know John Stilson and how good he is. He, you know, actually took a tough luck loss on Friday against Michael Rocha, who's Oklahoma's outstanding senior ace. But, you know, Michael Waka, I've written about just a big horse strike-throwing guy with a power fastball, good changeup. You know, he's been a really good for them on Saturdays. He's got a 0.75 ERA. And then you got Ross Stripling. Now they've moved kind of from the closer role into that Sunday role. And he pitched very well on Sunday this week. And, again, he's another guy with a below one ERA, and he's got really good stuff, you know, and they do have depth on this staff too. I think that they could afford to move Stripling into the rotation because they've got other guys in the bullpen. And they're starting to hit too, you know, and we're seeing Tyler Naquin take that step forward that a lot of people thought he would take. You know, I know some scouts in Texas who love that guy. I think he's really an impact player because he can run, he can hit line drives. He's a scrapper and he's got a cannon in the outfield, but he's hitting .392 now. You know, he's kind of taking the lead of that offense. So, I think it's an athletic kind of offense. They're going to run a lot, with Craig Brasson, who's obviously a speed guy. He's a top 200 guy for us out of the draft last year as a freshman, but one of the fasters out there. They still need some of their hitters to do better. You know, they haven't gotten what they've wanted from Adam Smith in particular. I mean, that guy's really, really struggling, and he's talented and hasn't put it together yet. And they've got a couple of guys like that just haven't hit like they want them to. But they're winning anyway, so give them credit.
I mean, Collazo and Smith are two guys, you know, those were kind of mainstays, it seemed like, coming into the year and not hitting. Like you said, it seemed like they're even expecting more out of, I don't know how you pronounce his last name. Is it just Jingle, Matt Jingle?
Yingle.
Yingle, and he had a great weekend this weekend. He seems like he's kind of the biggest bat in there, along with Tyler Naquin, as far as providing them some power. But when you have that kind of pitching, Aaron, and you have guys, you know, like you said, they're depth. I mean, they have a guy like Nick Fleece, I remember from a couple years ago was kind of their closer or like a setup man slash closer. Then last year didn't play as big of a role. They've got him, Joaquin Hinojosa, who's a guy who's been more of a position player for them, who's pitched a lot of their bullpen this year. They've done a great job mixing and matching on the mound. They have that bullpen depth like we talked about with South Carolina last year. And they don't walk anybody. You know, they throw strikes. They got a 5-1 strike at the walk ratio right now as a staff. So that's going to keep you in the hunt while you're figuring it out on offense. And it seems like some of those guys like Smith and Collazo are too good at college players, even with the bats, to struggle all year. So and Texas A&M definitely thrusting themselves, I think, into the mix in the Big 12. And then they're another team where, you know, you're just looking at their schedule and you're seeing that you know, they started conference play with as difficult a series as anyone's going to have in the Big 10, I mean, Big 12. To me, going on the road to Oklahoma is the toughest series in the Big 12 this year. And they win that series. Now they got Kansas, at K-State, at Texas Tech. These are all winnable series for them. I'm not saying they're easy or cakewalks. But these are all winnable series. They play Baylor. Two of those three are at home. You know, at home to Oklahoma State, at Missouri. I mean, you're just looking at it, home to Nebraska, and then they finish at Texas. It is there for A&M to win the vast majority of those series. And again, I'm just looking from a schedule standpoint, they're going to be favored to win most of those series there, and they've got a shot. Now they've won this series. I know I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but they have a shot to be a top eight national seed as far as I see it. They played a good enough non-conference schedule, and the conference schedule sets up very well for them.
You know, Oklahoma is the only team in that league that you think really might be able to put up some runs against A&M. And that's not to say that, you know, anything can happen any weekend, but none of those other teams are really offensive juggernauts. And this is a really great pitching staff that A&M has. And I think them and Texas are both going to win a lot of games because of their pitching staffs are just so much better than the other teams that they're going to be seeing in the Big 12. You have to wonder, is Oklahoma, now all of a sudden you have to wonder, is Oklahoma built to win in the Big 12 the way these other teams are? Because they don't have the elite pitching that A&M and Texas have.
Yeah, and they started a freshman. They had two guys this weekend. I forget the left-hander's name, and then Bert Smith, Dylan Overton, both making their first conference starts, and neither one got out of the fourth inning. And then, like you noted in the top 25 tracker, you know, Bobby Shore's a senior. Obviously, he was a JUCO transfer, but he went through all this last year, and they can't get him right. And it looks like they need to get him right. And like you said, they're built more for offense, and boy, Texas can pitch, A&M can pitch, all the top team, even, you know, Oklahoma State can pitch a little bit, K-State, we know that they know how to assemble a pitching staff and mix and match, Baylor has arms, boy, you know,
Nebraska.
They make Nebraska, absolutely, it really makes you wonder, like you said, Oklahoma better hit, because their pitching looks, even though I think they're the best team in the Big 12, I still think that, their pitching is middle of the pack in the Big 12.
Yeah.
So that's a big question. I think that's a great point, Aaron. Good note to end on. We had good questions on the on Twitter at Baseball America, at Aaron Fitt, at John Manuel BA if you want to follow us, or you can send those questions to us for next week's podcast to podcast@baseballamerica.com if you want to use good old-fashioned 20th century email, Aaron. But we're all about the 21st century here. You post them on our Facebook page or tweet us, or, of course, if you email them to us, we'll get to those as well. Aaron, where will you be next weekend now that you're who's in SoCal that you're going to see next weekend, you think?
You know, it's a quieter weekend finally out here. I might try to see the Saturday UCLA-USC game, Trevor Bauer against Austin Wood. But other than that, it's not as much going on finally, so a little bit of a breather out here.
Always enjoy talking college baseball with you. Thanks for taking the time, and thank you guys for listening to the download. We'll see you next week on the Baseball America College Podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.